From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This week, two powerful, successful black women, a congresswoman and a White House correspondent, were talked down to, disrespected, you might say, in the line of duty by white men. And boy, did it hit a nerve. Black working women around the country saying, I know that, I've been there. Hashtag Black Women at Work exploded on Twitter. We're listening. This hour on Point, race, gender, and respect in the workplace and beyond. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Did you see those moments this week when Sean Spicer scolded April Ryan? When Fox's Bill O'Reilly, speaking of Maxine Waters, an elder stateswoman, congresswoman, said she looked like James Brown? What were you thinking? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. April Ryan joins us in just a moment here. Here's the sound from Fox. This was the Bill O'Reilly bit on Fox and Friends Tuesday, telling the show's host that California Democrat Congresswoman Maxine Waters' hair, her James Brown hair, he said, if you please, made it impossible for him to listen to what she was saying in a just-aired clip of her speaking on the floor of the House of Representatives. O'Reilly later tweeted out an apology, but here it was.
Didn't hear a word she said. I was looking at the James Brown wig. If we have a picture of James, it's the same.
It's the same one.
Right. No,
and he's not using it anymore.
I got to defend her on that.
You guys are all wrong about
this. I have to defend her on that. You can't go after a woman's looks. I think she's very attractive.
But I didn't say she wasn't attractive. I love James Brown.
Can't listen to her. Can't hear a word she's saying. The James Brown wig. Right. O'Reilly tweeted out an apology later, but there it was. And then the White House press secretary. Here's a bit from that testy exchange with April Ryan. She's sitting in the White House briefing room. He's at the podium, and they're talking about, she's asking about the Trump administration's image, how that's all going, and we get into the head-shaking business. Listen here.
You got wiretap, and you got...
No, we don't have that. You I know.
On Capitol Hill.
No, I get it, but you keep... I've said it from the day that I got here until whatever, that there is no connection. You've got Russia. If the president puts Russian salad dressing on his salad tonight, somehow that's a Russian connection. But every single person... I appreciate your agenda here. But the reality is... Oh, no, hold on. No, at some point, report the facts. The facts are that every single person who has been briefed on this subject has come away with the same conclusion. Republican, Democrat, so I'm sorry that disgusts you. You're shaking your head. I appreciate it, but understand this, that at some point, the facts are what they are.
And that wasn't the end of the head shaking. Upbraiding from Sean Spicer? So he said, anyway, this was a little more with April Ryan in the White House briefing room.
April, hold on. It seems like you're hell-bent on trying to make sure that whatever image you want to tell about this White House stays, because at the end of the day, let me answer. But you know what? You're asking me a question, and I'm going to answer it, which is the president. I'm sorry.
Please stop shaking your head again. Joining me now from Washington, and we're pleased to have her, is April Ryan, White House correspondent, Washington Bureau Chief for American Urban Radio Networks. She's covered three presidents in her position going back to 1997. April Ryan is author of At Mama's Knee, Mothers and Race in Black and White. April, thanks very much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you, Tom.
Boy, we're talking just about a few minutes in the White House briefing room, and the country's been talking about it all week long. Did you realize as this was unfolding that there was something a little different going on?
Yes and no. I mean, I hate to say this, but we're kind of numb to this a little bit as journalists, particularly when it comes to this administration, because we are considered the enemy of the people now. For what, I don't know. I knew something was different about this, but I didn't realize that it would get the response, the overwhelming response that it's garnering. And actually, I'm glad it is, because there's a lot at play here. First Amendment issues, freedom of the press. We have a right to ask questions. I wasn't disrespectful in my question mm-hmm. of the press secretary. Mm-hmm. And it just is interesting. You know, I've been there for 20 years now this year, written two books about my experiences there and on other places. And related to the White House.
Yep.
This is just, it's just very interesting. It does make for another, it makes for a good story in the next book, though, but it's still unfolding. I mean, it's not just me, though. There was a woman over the weekend from Politico that Sean Spicer called an idiot during an interview. And I'm like, wow. So we are seeing a turn in this friendly adversarial relationship in the White House, a huge turn. And it's more adversarial now, it seems. But, you know, we're there to do what we do.
Can we just go into the details a little bit here? Because I've looked very closely at the video of this. Mm-hmm. And
me too, Tom. I have watched
bet you
over
have.
And over again.
I mean, it's not like you're doing some big theatrical head shake in there. You're trying to ask a question when it appears that you think he's kind of dodging or trying to change the subject. Your head goes down a little bit as if you're thinking about that or
exactly.
How to ask the next question. There's not some big going on. So what do you take of the way he kept asserting that?
Well, going back to what I just said, you know, he's got a job to do and I've got a job to do. Mm-hmm. And I believe Russia is a very, I believe Russia could be a third rail for them right now because it is all-encompassing in the news and they don't like it. 2.5 months in, and I've never seen this for any president to be under such scrutiny and under a microscope. And that is a sore spot for them, apparently. And I just simply asked, you know, and I didn't put this in there, but as poll numbers are dropping for this president, how do you, you know, 2 months in, 2.5 months in, I said, how do you 2.5 months in change the image, you know, of this administration? Because, I mean, you know, if your poll numbers are dropping and you've got all these investigations and scandals, something is, the look of it, you know, doesn't look like they have the winning picture that they want so desperately want.
So, okay, so we get that. And that's on the politics side of this.
And
we
talk all
about,
I ask.
Yeah, fair enough. And that's your job and you were on it. We talk about that stuff all the time. But what caught people was that in that discomfort, and you can see it and it's understandable, and he's got a tough job to do here. But for example, I'm looking here at Olivia Nuzzi. She's a Washington correspondent for New York Magazine. And she tweets, kind of to your point, April, Sean Spicer is rude to everyone, but it's difficult to imagine him speaking to a white male reporter the way he spoke to April Ryan today. What do you say, April? What made you the target of that particular kind of language?
I don't know. Maybe because
really?
I work for an outlet that's not employing thousands of people. Maybe because, you know, I'm a woman. I don't know, but I got it. And, you know, I do notice that, I mean, there is, you have to remember, though, Washington is a town, or politics in Washington and the politicos in Washington tend to be male. And it was hard back in the day when Helen Thomas and many of those other correspondents, and I'll say white female correspondents, were trying to break the marble ceiling then to get into the Correspondents Association and be part of the group.
But maybe it's not just genders in there.
Wait a minute. Back in the day, it was hard then.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking about those whose shoulders I stand on, the African-American women and also the African-American men who were trying to be in the press corps covering for the black community. And, I mean, Harry McAlpin over 70 years ago was told by white journalists, you know, if you come into the press conference, you know, if you step on someone's toes, there'll be a riot. But, you know, the president at that time said he welcomed him. And then, you know, just thinking about how hard it was back then, and it's unfortunate that we are seeing glimpses of sexism, and I'm not going to go as far as racism as of yet, but I'm going to say sexism for sure. It's sad to see we're still seeing sexism in certain quadrants in Washington.
April, let me ask you about this, though. Forgive me, but I just, if you want to make that distinction, there was this exchange you had, which was just an odd one with the president himself. Of course, this is where you were asking him if he planned to talk to the Congressional Black Caucus at a White House press conference back in February. And here was that exchange and the president's response.
Are you going to include the CBC, Mr. President, in your conversations with your urban agenda, your inner city agenda, as well as...
Am I going to include
Are you going to include the Congressional Black Caucus and the Congressional
Well,
Hispanic
I would.
Caucus,
I tell you what. Do you want to set up the meeting? Do you want to set up the meeting?
No.
Are they friends of yours?
I'm just a reporter.
Set up the meeting.
I know some of them, but I'm sure
Let's go. Set up
right
a
now.
Meeting. I would love to meet with the Black Caucus. I think it's great.
Are you going to set up the meeting? Do you want to set up the meeting? Are they friends of yours? Race isn't in there, April?
Well, let me say this to you, and I want you to hear me clearly, Tom,
okay.
Because if people, when you are in the midst of that, when you are in the mid, if you're in the midst of the thing with Spicer, in the midst with the President of the United States, mm-hmm. you've got to keep your wits about you.
Oh, yeah.
And you're not thinking about how it looks or plays. You're thinking about what you're asking at hand and trying to figure out what is unraveling in your face right now, because all eyes are watching you, really. So at that time when President Trump called me, that was February 17th. I remember the day very well. Mm-hmm. I remember everything about it, how it felt, how it tasted, how it just whatever, everything. I just felt everything about the room and still remember it. When he said to me, after I said to him, you know, the first question and the follow-up was that, will you bring in the CBC, the CHC? And I started saying, he said, who? I said, the Congressional Black Caucus, the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. And then he started talking. He said, well, sure, you know, you set up the meeting. And right there, I started shaking my head like, no. Is it, you know, because... And I had to catch myself because now I did shake my head like, no, because that is not for a journalist to do. That is not my place. That is definitely, that's inappropriate. And I just kept thinking about the impropriety of it all, that he would think that I would set it up, because I was like, oh, my God, do not think.
Because you were an African-American woman, apparently.
Well, I'm not going to say that. But
okay.
Let me say this. At that point, mm-hmm. I was literally trying to figure out, why are you thinking about impropriety? And nothing else really registered to me, because I was so on that impropriety piece, and I was just mouthing the words for the rest.
Okay, April, I know we're going to let you go. I apologize, April Ryan, author of At Mama's Knee, Mothers and Race in Black and White. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thanks, April. This hour about how high-profile examples of disrespect for two high-profile African-American women in Washington have lit up a conversation on race, gender, and respect across the country in the last week. Hashtag Black Women at Work just exploded on Twitter. You can join us this hour. Did you see those moments? And have you seen them? Sean Spicer telling April Ryan not to shake her head. Bill O'Reilly going off on the hair of Maxine Waters, James Brown wig, he said. I didn't hear a word she said. What is going on here? And did you hear the insult in these words? Have you been there? Do you understand the exasperation behind the hashtag Black Women at Work? Maxine Waters, of course, senior Democratic congresswoman out of California, she came back. She talked about this. She told MSNBC on Tuesday that she was just dismissing those comments pretty defiantly.
Let me just say this. I'm a strong Black woman, and I cannot be intimidated. I cannot be undermined. I cannot be thought to be afraid of Bill O'Reilly or anybody.
When vocal women speak up, they come under attack, she said.
We also know that when a woman stands up and speaks truth to power, that there will be attempts to put her down. And so I'm not going to be put down. I'm not going to go anywhere. I'm going to stay on the issues.
And this from Maxine Waters to women out there everywhere.
I'd like to say to women out there everywhere, don't allow these right-wing talking heads, these dishonorable people, to intimidate you or scare you. Be who you are. Do what you do. And let us get on with discussing the real issues of this country.
O'Reilly, Bill O'Reilly has come back with an apology. He said, as I have said many times, he said, I respect Congresswoman Maxine Waters for being sincere in her beliefs. I said that again today on Fox and Friends, calling her old school. Unfortunately, I also made a jest about her hair, which was dumb. I apologize. That from Bill O'Reilly. Sean Spicer and April Ryan, who we were just talking with, well,
They kind of had a more friendly exchange in a subsequent briefing in the White House briefing room. Here we go.
With that, I'd be glad to take your questions. April.
Well, thank you, Sean.
How are you today?
I'm fine, and how are you?
Fantastic.
Well, Sean, going back to some issues that are in the news, Nunez is not going to recuse himself. In the midst of all of this back and forth, what does the White House say about that?
They're a little more genteel back and forth between the press secretary calling on April Ryan first yesterday. How are you today? I'm fine, and how are you? We want to look at what's going on here. Brittany Packnett is with us right now. She started a national conversation about all this with the hashtag Black Women at Work after the remarks by Sean Spicer and Fox's Bill O'Reilly, an educator, co-founder of Campaign Zero, his group focused on improving police-community interactions, joins us from Washington. Brittany Packnett, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And with us from Chicago right now, our old friend Laura Washington, columnist at the Chicago Sun-Times, political analyst on ABC 7 Chicago. Laura, welcome back to On Point. It's been too long. Great to have you here.
It's good to be with you, Tom.
Brittany, what got you up and hashtagging in the aftermath of these couple of interactions?
Very plainly put, I was just over it. Congresswoman Waters and April Ryan are people for whom we should be showing a lot of respect, not simply because they are incredibly accomplished women who are doing important work, especially in this day and age, but because they're human beings. And I was in a place where I heard that comment about Congresswoman Waters' hair, not just as a comment about her hair, but about all of our hair. I heard the comments that I have heard in my own career that my friends and colleagues have heard throughout their careers. And I wanted to ensure that we took the time to help make the invisible visible, that we took this moment where people were experiencing outrage at what happened to help them recognize this is happening every day. It's happening in your office and in your workplace. And it's often happening in silence because many Black women do not have the platforms that April Ryan and Congresswoman Waters do to be able to speak up on these issues. And so I wanted to make sure that we took back our voice and our agency and our power in this moment to tell those stories, to reveal them, and to help everyone behave differently moving forward.
Laura Washington in Chicago, what did you think, or have you thought, of the kind of the quite large response to Brittany's hashtag here? A lot of people, women, and in many cases, no doubt African-American women, really responding, really relating to this, that this is an issue. Did it surprise you at all, Laura?
No, not at all. As Brittany points out, a lot of women responded because they're living it every day. She wants to make this visible, but for us, we've been living it our whole lives. We have encounters all the time in the workplace, socially, and the wider and maler the environment is, the more powerful the impact is. When you look at someone like April Ryan, at the top of her game, at the top of her career, White House correspondent for 20 years. She's now a national figure because of the environment that she's been operating in. So you can imagine the intensity and the pressure that's on her every day. She doesn't want to talk. She didn't want to talk with you about the racial angle, mm-hmm. but believe me, she lives it and feels it as an African-American woman every day.
I mean, we look at some of these hashtag responses, you know, them. I'm looking for a member of management. Me. That would be me. Them. Oh, blank stare. Hashtag Black Women at Work. Or, I mean, there's some weird, you know, another tweet here. Dad sends gift to office. Boss, I didn't know you had a dad. Hashtag Black Women at Work. This stuff can really sting, Brittany.
It absolutely can. And when you think about how hard it is already to get up and go to work every day and accomplish the tasks that are put before each and every one of us, imagine then loading on top of that the additional cognitive burdens and stress that it takes to manage and navigate these situations, often silently. What we also found in the hashtag conversation is that a lot of women needed to read other women speaking up about these issues because they were afraid to. They were worried about their employment. They were worried about whether or not they'd be fired if they spoke up. And if they were worried about speaking up on Twitter, imagine how worried people are about speaking up in the workplace. Many women talked about when they finally identified, look, this is what's happening to me and it is unfair and inequitable, being told that they were being overly sensitive, being told that they were being dramatic, being told that they were being angry, which, as we know, is a stereotype often lobbed at black women, that we are the angry black woman. And so even when we speak up about these issues, we find that they double on top of themselves. And that is, at the end of the day, an issue for us, but it is also an issue for companies and organizations who want productive, stress-free workers.
We got a lot of callers for the two of you. Beverly in Watertown, Massachusetts. You're on with Brittany Packnett and Laura Washington.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I wanted to share with you and your audience that as a black woman who was born in 1946 and who has worked and worked and worked and have many a job on many different levels,
okay,
including on a professional level, this has gone on forever, forever. And it's not just about black women that work. Conceptually, critically, that is too narrow of a frame. You have to look at the fact of how black people, black young men, and black women are treated in the larger society and how long that's been going on.
Well, I get that there's a bigger frame, Beverly. I get that. But, I mean, this is the hashtag that kind of took off. And you're right. You could be too narrow. But I hear you also saying that you've experienced precisely this within this narrower
exactly.
frame as well.
Exactly. I'll tell you my favorite story of this sort. I live in the Boston area. I worked at Tufts Medical Center a number of years ago at the Children's Hospital. That is to say, the floating hospital. Not children. Mm-hmm. That's Harvard.
Yep.
Be that as it may, one of the things I did was to do research on possible funding sources for the doctors who I worked with.
Okay.
So I went over to their medical library at a certain point, told the librarian what I was looking for, and then she seemed to not have, she had problems grasping it, it seemed. But then she asked me, she said, do you know how to use a card catalog? On my name tag, it said, MPH, Master of Public Health. And it just so happens that's from Yale Medical School. Mm. Yeah, I know how to use a card catalog.
Yeah, I guess you do, Beverly. Brittany, there you go. There's a lifetime of experience speaking.
A lifetime. And I think that this point is so important that this is not new. And yet social media is a tool that often allows us to expose things that have been happening for a long time. Everything from police violence in our communities to educational inequity to, yes, what is happening to black women in society and at work. We, of course, work in the context of our world. And so the caller is absolutely right. The kinds of things that we are dealing with at work are also the kinds of things we deal with politically, socially, et cetera. But I do believe it is important for people to pull up a chair and listen, which I think a lot of people did when the conversation began yesterday, or 2 days ago, rather.
Yep.
Because lots of people have positions of authority or influence at their workplace. They are leading teams. They are leading projects. They are creating businesses. The question for all of us is, how will we create inclusive businesses, organizations, and teams such that these are not the stories of the next 40 to 100 years?
Hashtag Black Women at Work. And the tweet is, walking into a room, running the presentation, and people still ask your white colleagues questions about your work. Or here's another, hashtag Black Women at Work, Black Teacher at Work, being complimented for being so articulate. I'm an English teacher with 2 degrees in English. Scott in Auburn, Alabama. Scott, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks, Tom. I wanted to provide maybe a little bit different context, as I'm a white male, so I've not experienced these things. But we tend to view the world, it seems like there's two different views of the world, and people are stupefied, I think, when they find that people don't agree with them about these issues. Everybody that I know would say that racism is wrong and that treating people differently is wrong.
Okay.
But part of equality is not having a special class of people and a special class of insults that are a little bit hard to see for some of us, but easy to see for the rest of us. For example, Maxine Waters has made quotes such as the CIA distributed crack cocaine in black neighborhoods. She also said that President Bush II was a liar. She didn't go to Trump's inauguration because she said, I don't like him. I don't respect him. No one said, I mean, what's the topic of your conversation today? Respect. No one, there was all you got about that was go girl. You go girl, you know, to speak truth to power. So when an offhanded comment about hair comes up, which is apologized for almost immediately.
By O'Reilly, yeah.
That takes over a media that has so attuned to a particular kind of insult, but not the rest of them.
Hey, Scott, I'm really glad you've called. Hang on. Laura, let me put that to you. Scott says, you know, come on. Maxine Waters plays rough and tough, and here's O'Reilly being a little rough, and let's not have two standards.
Well, I don't I'm sure Scott's not the first person to call Maxine Waters out for the comments that he feels that she made that were offensive. She has been criticized, not just by Bill O'Reilly. So I think that there isn't a double standard here. Folks have been criticized. And I'd also want to remind you that Bill O'Reilly did apologize, but then the next time, I think it was on his very next show, went after her for some period of time again on his show and attacked her and criticized her. So if he was really sincere and really wanted to respect her, that wouldn't have been the response he would have made.
Well, but it's within his right to criticize her for her positions, for her politics.
Of course, but doesn't it appear that if you've done something very disrespectful and you've apologized, would the first thing you'd want to do at the first opportunity was to go after someone and attack them again? It's like you're basically sending them a message: I really don't respect you. I really don't see you as an equal. And so there. And I think that's the kind of messages that African American women get too often.
Brittany Packnett, what do you say to our caller, Scott, saying, look, if Maxine wants to dish it out, she's got to be ready to take it?
I think the Congresswoman has very clearly answered that she is ready for anything that comes her way, as are so many of us, and we have to be every single day. But this conversation through the hashtag was about more than just a single incident. And this is where I think conversations like these are so critically important. What Scott brought was a perspective that is particularly privileged, and I appreciate him opening up by saying, look, these are not things that I have experienced, but just because you haven't experienced them doesn't mean that it isn't real.
But what do you mean when you say it's privileged? What's privileged about it?
When we talk about concepts of privilege, and I'm not just talking about white privilege, I'm talking about male privilege, I'm talking about privilege of professionalism and station in life, but privilege in any sense is blinding. It means that often you can think that your experience is the only experience that has ever existed, and or that other experiences that are different than yours are actually not real, right? That people are being dramatic. This idea that we can agree or disagree with somebody's lived experience is unfortunately incorrect. If I lived it, then it is fact. And there are thousands of women. That's why it was a number one trending topic. There are thousands of women who have been living these experiences every single day. And so agreeing or disagreeing is actually not the point. The point is whether or not we are willing to listen to the fact that there are experiences and perspectives other than the ones we have personally been experiencing, recognize that those are things that should not be present in an equal and just society, and do something about it.
Scott, I appreciate your call. Let me get one more right here from Edmond, Oklahoma. Terrence, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I pretty much kind of agree with most of the callers here, in the sense that as a country, we're taking a turn in professional type displays of courtesy and respect. And this is typical when there's a confluence of ideas and understanding, which is what we're lacking a lot of times. There's not enough dialogue about the differences a black woman or a black man or a Hispanic woman, Hispanic man bring to a table, because the environments are completely different. And as Brittany alluded to, when you try to subject a person's position or opinion to that of a person who does not have the same experience, there is going to be some kind of disconnect between ideas. But the conversations that should have happened after these incidents is, how do we prevent those types of issues in the future?
But are we, Terrence, are we at a moment where there's somehow in the air more permission to be kind of dismissive or disrespectful in that way?
I could agree. I could probably see where that comment might be. In a lot of situations, well, we could say that, but no, not necessarily. The difference is that they're out in the open. That's the real difference. Like I said, they're out in the open, but they go and we get closed off because there's an apology, and the apology should be the end of it, but that's not the way it should actually be. There should be more discussions about why Bill O'Reilly would say something like that. Why in particular would you say something? It's funny, because if you ask black people, historically, that's a stereotype. And we're still living those types of stereotypes in the professional arena. But should we be? So Maxine Walters is an educated person, and would she be subject to the same type of display if she were a white person or a white man or a white woman?
This On Point podcast is sponsored by ZipRecruiter, making it quick and easy to find quality candidates. Instantly post your job to over 200 job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Select, screen, and rate candidates with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard and find the right hire fast. Find out why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 500 companies and hundreds of thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. Get started for free today at ZipRecruiter.com/OP.
Hi, it's Tom. Thanks for listening to this On Point podcast. I want you to take a moment to think about the people you care about. Have they ever listened to a podcast? All this month, we're asking our listeners to tell a friend about a podcast they love. This one? Another one? Do it in real life or on social media. And if they don't know how to download them, give them a quick lesson. You'll be opening up a new world for them. Tell us what you're recommending with the hashtag TryPod. That's hashtag TryPod. And thanks. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about how high-profile examples of disrespect for two high-profile African-American women in Washington have lit up a conversation on race, gender, and respect across the country. With us, Brittany Packnett. She launched the hashtag Black Women at Work after the Bill O'Reilly comments on Maxine Waters, James Brown wig, and the Sean Spicer, comments to correspondent April Ryan in the White House briefing room this week. Brittany Packnett joins us from Washington. Laura Washington is with us from Chicago. We've got Washington and Chicago all over the place here. Columnist at the Chicago Sun-Times, political analyst at ABC 7 Chicago. You can join us. Black women, women of color, let's hear it. Have you experienced this kind of slight dismissal? And what's it mean that it's happening to these powerful black women? Why now? Is there some kind of extra permission in the air now? And how do we get past this? People responding online. On the one hand, Darian says, this is identity politics, the kind of BS that helped get Trump elected. It's all political. It's really using minorities to express political attacks on Trump. Okay. Jan says, these incidents are rooted in the racist perception of black women that's existed in this country since the beginning of time. Myrna says, mainstream America feels it's safe to lash out at blacks in uncomfortable situations. Another one here, I am a strong black woman, but please know black women are still people. Please treat us accordingly. Sarah in Springfield, Illinois, thank you for calling, Sarah. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I had a comment about both, really.
Okay.
First, with Sean Spicer, I think, as many people have already alluded to pretty accurately, this resonated with women because every woman, white or black, is hearing in their mind that time at work where they were told, smile more, don't look so angry, or stop doing this or that because, I don't know, it makes them uncomfortable or something.
Yeah.
And so that's why it resonated. And I think what I think white women need to understand is that black women are dealing with this, and it's very similar, but it's just so much greater. And it's coming at all fronts. It's not just coming at them from a boss or an authority figure. It's coming at them from society and from the public at large in a way that we as white women don't really have to see or deal with on a daily basis, but that everybody should be aware of if they really care about their fellow human beings. Mm-hmm. And as far as Bill O'Reilly goes, this is really just par for the course with him. I can think of so many other times when he's treated black people this way and been so condescending, when he felt the need to fact-check Michelle Obama when she talked about slaves building the White House, or when he said that Mark Lamont Hill looks like a cocaine dealer when he had him on his show. I mean, he clearly has these deep ingrained racisms in him, these attitudes, and it's not the same type of hostility that the KKK have, where they are, like, overly violent, but he clearly has these negative attitudes, this disdain that he's not willing to face down in a critical way to look at his ignorance and to find out how he could be a better person. And if he really respected Maxine Waters, he would care enough to try and understand her.
Sarah, I really appreciate your call. I mean, Zakia writes to us here on Twitter, not anything new. This goes back to when black adult men and women were called boy and girl. Black women have the double whammy. Laura Washington, do you feel a kind of same old here? Or is there something something different in the air now?
I would say both. I would agree that this is nothing new. Decades, in many ways, when you think about the images of African-American women and how they were treated during the time, slavery times, there are a lot of parallels. But I think there's an environment out there that's, I think, has evolved since Barack Obama was elected in 2008. And that's when we were all supposed to sing Kumbaya and race didn't matter anymore. But what in fact happened was that there was a serious backlash against him that was instigated, I think, primarily by leadership in Washington. We're not going to work with this man. He's a black man. And then, of course, we all know how Donald Trump stirred that up with his birther movement. He continued that backlash and encouraged this attitude that black folks, women don't matter. And that's where you saw all the racism and misogyny come out during the campaign. And he has continued to that environment as president. If you look at his cabinet, if you look at who's working with him in the White House, as I understand it, he has the whitest and malest cabinet since Ronald Reagan. He doesn't have a lot of women. He has very few people of color around him. He's sending a message that black folks, that women do not matter. And I think that message came out of the campaign, and it continues to be a message that's resonating in Washington and beyond. And I think it's giving people permission to disrespect us as a result.
Brittany, do you see a permissive moment here on this front, or more of what's familiar?
I could not agree more. It is a both and. This is certainly, and I would say, an evolution of what is familiar, a time when these kinds of comments are much more permissive, and quite frankly, even worse comments are much more permissive. And I think a lot of us who are visible, especially in the activist community like myself, are dealing with the ramifications of that. And it's interesting because I always hear the response that it would just go away if we stopped talking about it, right? We have to deal with the fact that calling out racism is not divisive. Racism is divisive. If folks are tired of hearing about racism, about sexism, about xenophobia, we're far more tired of dealing with it. It's not about not calling out differences or getting rid of differences. It's about not treating people differently because we come from different places. If we root out what's at the base of this, at the foundation, if we pull this thing up by the roots, then we will have far different outcomes. It's why the hashtag Black Woman at Work had been used before. I had never seen it before. It had been used in multiple contexts because we have been having this conversation. We have been having to identify ourselves as black women at work for a long time. It was original in the way that I used it. As I said, I had never seen it before, but it was high time that we had this conversation and had it publicly so that people couldn't run away from the fact that this happens every day.
Oh, here's a hashtag Black Women at Work. Watching white lawyers wander around wondering who the prosecutor is, never even considering that it could be me. But then you've got this kind of reply, online here. Here's a listener saying, what a bunch of hogwash. Find a spine, Ms. Ryan. What about
it? Oh, my goodness. I got to respond to that.
Okay, Laura. Okay, jump in.
if you just heard her on the air and with Sean Spicer, and if you saw her, the woman has a spine, just like Maxine Waters. Say, they're tough. We have to be tough. We have to be tougher, smarter, more professional, more accomplished than anybody else to survive in these environments. Mm-hmm. So I'm pushing back real hard on that one.
Okay.
That's quite a lot.
there it is. Catherine in Arlington, Massachusetts. Catherine, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm a white woman, and I wanted to give an example just to speak to the fact that I think as white people, others need to take responsibility for the racism that we've internalized, whether consciously or not, whether we think we're racist or not. We exist in a racist society. And when I was in my graduate program, I remember walking up to a black woman who was a professor and saying something to her. I assumed that she was an administrator. And I asked her for like a paper or where do I put this?
Yep.
And she said, I'm a professor here. And I really I still feel horrible and embarrassed and ashamed of that. But I have to look at that in myself. It didn't come from consciously trying to hurt her or racism, but I'm sure it did hurt her. And I had to look within myself and recognize that there is racism within me, whether I want it or not. I have to look at it. And what one of your guests was talking about, we have to have these conversations. If not, it's just going to remain dormant and underneath and be influencing our behavior all the time. We have to be talking about it and taking responsibility and looking at ourselves, because we exist in a culture and a history that has been racist forever, and we are all affected by it. So yep. Thank you. That's all I wanted to say.
I appreciate your call, Catherine. I mean, Brittany, I mean, there it is, an example. There's a white collar, white woman who's, you know, perfectly happy to look at the history and try. That doesn't mean she's free of it, though. Who is?
Absolutely. And that, honestly, that kind of reaction is exactly why we wanted this conversation to happen. This is why social media is so effective, because we can make the invisible visible and have people start to look at their own experiences where they either could have been on the offensive end or the defensive end. I really appreciate that caller for being so honest. We are socialized to believe these things, right? We are socialized to believe these things about Black women. And so, yes, as she said, whether we want it or not, whether you want it or not, it's there. The question is, are you brave enough to examine it within yourself and then correct yourself in the future? That's exactly the kind of listening and action that we need people to take. At the end of the day, you know, an effective workplace is an equitable workplace. We're not just talking about an issue of morality, although let me be very clear, we are. We're also talking about an issue of efficacy. I was at Harvard Business School this weekend giving a keynote address about social enterprise, and I talked about the fact that equity in the workplace and equity in social enterprise is about our hearts. It is about the moral question of equity and equality in this country. But we also know that diverse workplaces get more done, and they get more done faster. They get more done better. They get more done for more people because they have that perspective at the table. If I'm in a diverse workplace, but I don't feel welcome, I don't feel included, I don't feel supported, and I don't have the same opportunities, then it's much more likely that I will leave that workplace. And then whatever cause that we are working for, whatever our bottom line is weakened. So we have to pay attention to this moral question. But if you really think that the moral question isn't for you, then ask yourself if your workplace is equitable, because it'll make it more effective.
Lots of response here. Plural Voices writes to us, listening right now, and writes, gracefully responding to racial insults while focusing on actual content of import is life for hashtag Black Women at Work, at April D. Ryan, at On Point Radio. Allison in Virginia, Norfolk, Virginia. You're on the air, Allison.
Hi, Tom. I hope I articulate well. I just would like to say that I think the underlying cause of all of this is just that people are rude, you know, commenting, trying to get a laugh out of people by insulting. And that can happen to anyone. It can happen to a blonde woman or a Black woman. And I'm not discounting anything historically about African Americans or women in general in the workplace, but just that it would be great if people were more understanding and they were able to talk to people without, being so rude.
People are rude. Yeah. Laura, are you willing to chalk it up to that? People are rude sometimes. They're too rude sometimes. But and they can be rude to anybody, quite true. But the implication, or more than that here, is that some people are up against more of that rudeness, if that's the word you want to use, than others.
Well, sure, people can be rude, but people can also be racist and sexist, and the two are not mutually exclusive or inclusive necessarily. I don't think any of that should be accepted, but I think that Brittany's point is that there's so much under the radar that we experience. Maybe she's had different experiences, but the experiences we've had have been invisible and not being talked about. And I think that there's a reason for that, because they go beyond rudeness, they go beyond disrespect. They go to some fundamental cultural problems with racism and sexism in our society.
Shanita in Newport News, Virginia. Shanita, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I was, I just kind of tuned in and was listening, and my opinion is that really, if you think back to even the Native Americans, or what we know as Native Americans,
mm-hmm.
you know, America was built on bullying, pretty much. You know, the people that claim to be the founding fathers, you know, that comment I don't understand, because it's like, how can you find something that was never lost? But the whole point is that you would have to kind of start with the whole foundation of where, of what we know as America was built on. You know, it was built on this attitude of, well, I'm going to take what I want, you know, and I'm going to treat people however I see fit.
But what does that mean, Shanita? Here we are. It's a few hundred years later. Can we work forward from here?
Well, you know, the past always repeats itself.
Ooh.
If we truly were learning from the past, then why are things still the same?
Yeah.
I think that's the question that needs to be asked. We're constantly talking about, you know, Black history, and we have all these history classes in U.S. history, but nothing really is changing, I mean, besides technology.
Shanita, I really appreciate your call. Brittany, here we are.
Well, the sad fact is that we actually haven't been taught a very accurate history in this country. As the caller just said, American Indians are a perfect example of this. We are taught very little about that culture and that history, and what we are taught is often inaccurate. So I do believe that history repeats itself when we are not wise enough to learn it, and thus far we have not been wise enough to learn it accurately. So I do believe that's why we're still here. As far as what the caller right before said, though, I think a lot of attitude and reflections around the Women's March is a really great example of this. There were so many women of color, trans women, disabled women, who actually didn't feel that they had a place in a conversation that was being dominated by white women. Not because there are not common issues, but because so often the intersectional issues that arise for those of us who do have additional identities that marginalize us in this society are often not recognized. They go hidden. People say, join the common agenda. Don't worry about your identity politics. That's what happened during the suffrage movement in this country. There were white women who pushed Black folks aside and said, we'll deal with your issues later. And it took Black women across the South another 40 years to gain the right to vote. So we know what happens when people keep telling women of color, Black women in particular, to step back and we'll work on your issues later. The things that have happened to me in the workplace were not just because I was a woman. Yes, my nail polish has been commented on, and that could happen to any woman. But when someone tells me that wearing my hair straight instead of in a natural way or in braids is more professional, that is not just about my gender. That is also about my race. The idea that my natural hair as it grows out of my head is revolutionary or unprofessional has to be something that we look at honestly and with true eyes.
Laura Washington, are we on an endless treadmill here or getting somewhere somehow, sometimes?
I never give up hope, and I think the fact that we're having this conversation today, the fact that Brittany is out there with her hashtag educating people, not just about the history, but the present, gives us an opportunity to continue to having this conversation, to build allies, to gain respect, and to move forward. And I hope if we get a half of a half of a half of an inch forward, that's a great deal of progress.
Indeed.
Laura, I have missed you. I have missed you. Thanks for being with us today, Laura.
Good to be here.
Laura Washington of the Chicago Sun-Times. And Brittany Packnett, she got hashtag Black Women at Work going this time. Brittany, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.